Welcome back, WNST, Taos from Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're back at it, State Fair. I've had a delicious breakfast, and now, you know, it's just like breakfast and conversation in Catonsville, right? And we get, at some point, we'll go over to Dundalk, and we'll have some Eastside people beyond Dutch.
But you branched out today. You're usually a chicken and waffles guy. Today, it was like eggs and sausage.
It's a North Arbutus breakfast this morning with the Speaker of the House, Adrian Jones, Don Mohler, of course. We were about to get into
Sessions getting ready to start. Before we do that, though, we better, Dr. Rabowski would never forgive us if we did not say that after Lansdowne High School, UMBC Retriever. He always says one of his proudest graduates. Talk to us a little bit about your UMBC experience.
Well, my UMBC experience, my brothers, they went to other schools, you know, outside. And I could walk to UMBC from my house. And my time there, it was not as massive as it is now, not into the STEM and cyber, everything else.
It was kind of new then, right?
It was very, very new.
Did you see it get constructed as a little girl?
Oh, yes, yes.
You saw it as a hole in the ground and built
it
as it came up.
It used to be Wilton Farm, you know, there, some of the land over there. And then the time I was there, the buildings had names such as, you know, Dorm 1, Dorm 2, Lecture Hall 1, everything else. So
there wasn't an event center.
Right, right. There wasn't an event center. And to help pay for my college, I worked at the library there for 4 years to help, you know, on college work study to help pay for my education. But it has evolved, and I decided at that time to go into psychology because, you know, it was the mid-70s. We were going to save the world. So a lot of times.
How's that going for you, the saving the world part? Is that working out all right? Well, you put yourself in a position to at least affect the world.
Yeah, right. Yes. So that's good. But I'm very proud of where it has evolved over the years. And looking back, I think that was a great choice for me because, again, it was close to home. And, you know, growing up in a small community, it worked for me. So
very good. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, before we jump to the General Assembly, we would be remiss, as we say, we're taping this in the middle of November, run right before the session. As we tape this, millions of Americans have been glued to their TV screens watching impeachment hearings, hearing really incredible revelations about the President of the United States. Quite frankly, we don't know whether or not we'll have the same president when the General Assembly resumes. We assume that we will, given the Republican majority in the Senate. What's your take, not as an elected leader, as a citizen? Because Nestor and I talk about it all the time. We were talking about it with folks that came in here this morning. What's your take as you watch this unfold?
I think it's, and a lot of you could look at it as being very, very sad that we're going through this. And I'm very disappointed in our current president, and I also disappointed into the Republicans who know what the real truth is, but they're still going to try to back him. And I think if you really cared about the citizens, you would do what is in the best interest. And I think that as this, you know, I was watching some of it off and on. And people who are making, given the facts, they'll try to change it or turn it around. And even Trump himself, Trump is the only president that uses Twitter account and tweets all the time.
11 or 12 times this morning. We're here at 10 o'clock in the morning. 11 or 12 times already this morning.
And all of it is calling people liars. I want to ask you this, because Don and I, Don was my high school guidance counselor in 1982, and then went on to become a principal and went to work for the county. Mm-hmm. And he got really angry at me early in my career when he went into office. He's working for Jim, and he's doing PR, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'm on the radio, and I'm angry about the war in Iraq or something. It was something 20 years ago. And these politicians, they're crooked. He called me. He's like, whoa. Hold on. You and I had some nose-to-nose about that. He's like, look, there are crooked politicians, but I'm in this now, and I'm telling you, like, 98% of us are clean. 90.
I bet the speaker agrees with that.
And there is this part of watching this every day that you feel, especially when I see people feeling like they're on the defense team when they're representing citizens. It's disgraceful.
Yeah.
But there is this part of it where that this is really going to affect the confidence of the country, which was already shook, right?
Listen, I think, and I do want that, Nestor, that's a great point.
Corruption
I'd love the speaker to talk about her 20-some years.
Literally yesterday, on the same day, we have the mayor of my city with the FBI. I had split screen for an impeachment. So I have corruption on a small screen and corruption in a big screen. Corruption in my city, corruption in my country.
Well, and here's my here's my take. Thank you for raising it, Nestor, and speaker, jump in. Mm-hmm. Nestor is right. That's been a hot button for me for years because you and I have worked with hundreds, if not thousands, but certainly hundreds of elected officials.
Oh, yeah.
When people, spurred on by the president, go on social media, which has been the bane of all of our existence, to just demonize folks as stupid, crooks,
fake news,
all out for themselves. I always say to people, a lot of times, the only thing I'll fire back sometimes is, do you know, and I'll pick on Dutch, because Dutch is one of the few that rarely do people do that. Occasionally, Dutch has this somehow ability to make everybody like him. It's like magic dust that Dutch has, right? But you say to them, I'll say to them, wait a minute now. I've known Dutch, I have to think back, probably 30, 35 years. Mm-hmm. Do you know the congressman? Well, I don't have to know him. Well, maybe you should.
Yeah.
Because...
Yeah.
Whether it's Chris Van Hollen or Ben Cardin or some Republicans,
literally.
A Barry Glassman, a Bob Ehrlich, up to throw Republicans into the mix. They're not people on the take.
No.
They're not people trying to pull a fast one. They're people who believe in public service.
Right.
React to that.
Yeah, that also bothers me because they generalize all, and that's why I don't use the word all the time, politicians, because it connotes to people just what you have been saying, and particularly you're looking at, you know, 8 or 9 or 11 hours of the impeachment hearings daily, and people just and some people will characterize that. Then with the mayor's thing yesterday, they just see and just give you, you know, and they'll just generalize without realizing that there are more good public servants than there are bad politicians. You know,
fair enough,
the mayor. The mayor made a very bad mistake.
Sure.
No one's going to sit here.
Right.
You're not going to sit here. None of us.
No.
The mayor violated her public trust.
Right.
I mean, by all accounts, she violated. That doesn't taint every other person who wants to run for public office.
Right.
I mean, way back in 1997, you didn't say, oh, let me see how much I can make out of this.
No.
And hopefully I can be rich in 20 years.
No. You wouldn't go into this field.
Or if it did, it didn't work, did it?
No.
So you're going to walk in there in a few days into the General Assembly, trying to imagine the emotions, and... You're going to open. What session is this? Do we know?
This will be the 100. No, it would be 439.
So 400 some sessions.
Yeah.
And there are 11 pictures hanging on that wall, Adrian. 11 pictures.
Mm-hmm.
11 men.
Mm-hmm.
11 white men.
That's right.
The next picture that goes up is an African American female.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Talk about your emotions when you go up to the podium that day.
Well, I realize, you know, I've been in it about 6 or 7 or 8 months by the time I get there. But it's different when you're actually sitting in 2020, presiding over the chamber, and I have opening day. There's a lot of people there anyway, and a lot of my family will be there, and other history makers are, you know, will be there as well, and it's what opening day is sort of more camaraderie than any other day. But this will be, and I said, well, you know, this is history. This is first day of session, and I'll probably say to myself, don't blow anything.
So will you have to, will you need a moment to collect yourself?
Well, I can do that. I can do that with people not really realizing that's what I'm doing. But, you know, it's just, you know, it's something I don't take for granted. And I know those who came before me allowed me to be able to be on January 8th, 2020, presiding over this.
Did you ever think you'd have this gig? I mean, in any of the last 20 years? Was it something you... I mean, you're sitting there, you've watched it, you've watched the job, you're equipped for it because you've been a part of it.
And
it's interesting. It's interesting. Well, good. Well, I'm gonna, building on Nestor's question, it's interesting because everybody by now knows the story, and I thought, man, it speaks volumes about Adrian, that, you know, there was this very public, very contentious back and forth between Derek Davis and Maggie McIntosh.
And we had Maggie on a couple weeks ago.
And she talked about and talking about fighting for the job, and they realized neither one could get there, and they both say to each other, and let's just go to Adrian and ask her if she'll do this. I mean, that speaks to your leadership, right?
Yeah, because I had no idea, because I was just sitting in the back of the room, and I joked with people. I said, had I known that would happen, I would have had it on a different outfit. So, for that,
well, they tapped on the shoulder on the county right after a tragedy.
He never had the right outfit.
Well, I mean, you're another one that didn't know that you were getting tapped on the shoulder either, right? Literally.
No.
It's all that what I was saying previously about be you ever ready, and you never know what circumstances present itself. So I think just another example of that.
Be ready for the occasion. All right, so now we're into the session.
We got to go, Kerwin.
We got two big things. Boy, you're going to jump into the deep end of the pool right away, both of them education related.
Okay.
Kerwin and school construction. So let's talk. Let's start with
Kerwin. Two of Mohler's pet projects.
Right, absolutely. But Nestor is passionate about Kerwin. We're trying to educate folks. We've had David Hornback. We've had Bill Ferguson. We've had Maggie. We've had a lot of folks. We've had Cheryl Boast.
The irony of it, when this gets broadcast, today is the last day of the Kerwin Commission is meeting, and they're going to be taking a vote today. They started at 10 o'clock today, and they'll be taking a vote in terms of the official vote for the commission.
Well, here's the softball of softballs, but I think we have to start here because we want to educate folks. Mm-hmm. People in their cars driving around today, they've had a wonderful holiday, they've put on a few pounds, and now they're starting to hear about Kerwin. Why does it matter? Why is Kerwin so darn...
My wife wants this question.
Why is it so darn important?
This is important because, from my perspective, we have done it right in terms of looking at education into the future, in terms of what our young people need, no matter what their zip code is. We have signaled out some key areas that we are putting funding in. For 3 years, we do have the funding to cover it. In terms of the school construction, you heard constantly about this administration about not having adequate either air conditioning or heating. This will address, and this will affect, this is paramount, it'll affect all of our schools in the state of Maryland, and this is something that is not just what was done before when we had another school review committee, the Thornton Committee. This particular one, we looked at what other countries were doing in terms of we were modeled after that, what the success was. This is a big deal, and we have the funding for, again, for the first 3 years, and also in terms of our school construction, that $2.2 billion. This is all going to be voted on.
When will this all happen? I mean, we've been talking about it for 6 months already. What's the timeline on this into the spring? Like, when's the big fight going to happen? When will this either be thumbs up or thumbs down?
Yeah, when we go into session. That's good. Right. House Bill 1 is the school construction.
House Bill 1, school construction. Then follow up
so
on
this
that.
I want to talk.
Let's follow up because I love your question, Nestor. Because I'm not sure people people understand how Kerwin, and this, you're an expert because you're a budgetary expert. You were our person for many years.
Yeah, and I served on it until the last six months.
You were our person, right? So how does Kerwin take folks behind the curtain, because it's real now. Okay. You're the speaker. Right. We're no longer passing a buck. How does Kerwin get done, and how do we get the governor to the table? Let people see how the sausage is made, as they say in Hamilton.
Well, we'll get it done because, as I was saying previously, the first 3 years is covered. But we're doing that for the key things that we thought it was important that we need to be funding right away. If we were to do everything, we wouldn't be able to do that. And none of us on our end, none of the commission members, are talking about, at this point, raising taxes, state taxes on that. That has not been what we have been discussing. The only person who's been discussing that has been the governor.
So if you're listening, if you're in your car or you're watching on Facebook, you now have had three distinguished legislators, Senate, who will be Senate president in the new session, Bill Ferguson, Delegate Maggie McIntosh, and Speaker of the House, Adrian Jones, say, folks, we're not talking new taxes here make this work. No. You know, the governor uses these crazy numbers, 39% in income tax, 89% in sales tax, 535% in property tax, costing taxpayers $6,000 a year. And he's going out with a couple million dollars in dark money to promote that.
I've said this a couple times. Yeah. Who wants to be the anti-education governor? I don't understand what's in this for him, because this affects every child in the state. And listen, I mean, for any politician, and I'm just a citizen at this point, you vote with the money. The money speaks to where your intentions are. It's all talk, and then what we appropriate is really what we've done. That's where our conscience, that's where our morality is, right?
Right, and as has other polls has shown, that majority of people are in support of what we're doing with Kerwin, to realize that in order to go forward, for us to be in the 21st century and beyond, for our students, no matter what their zip code, no matter what their standing, they can deserve nothing less.
So you're going to be, I guess, you and Senator Ferguson,
education,
you are the ones that are going to have to roll your sleeves up and get the governor involved. You sense the outrage in Nestor's voice in that it seems to us the governor, even if he doesn't agree with every part of Kerwin, and he had people on the commission.
It's his budget secretary.
Why wouldn't he be rolling his sleeves up? He's not.
He said nothing positive.
Right. How do you get him in the room to say, all right, but governor, let's work this out.
It's expensive, right?
The governor was invited by Rick Kerwin for a prior meeting. He declined to come. So when we extended that, so we short of picking him up physically and bringing him here, which we can't do.
Is it your job to at least listen? Right. As a citizen, I want him to take that meeting, even if he thinks it's bunk.
Yeah.
I've sat and watched this impeachment for a week, and it's bunk.
that's why that offer was extended to them, and he refused to do that. Because I guess if you look like you're trying to get the facts, you don't have the defense of saying how much it's going to be costing and doing all these misinformation to the public. So
House Bill 1 is Built to Learn Act. That's the $2.2 billion for school construction.
Yeah, currently.
Can Maryland afford the Built to Learn Act, the $2.2 billion in school construction, and Kerwin?
Yeah, because there's two pots of money. One is capital, schools, and then the other is operating. And we also remember in the last election, we signed a check off in terms of education trust fund for, the casino money. That goes into it as well in terms of the current.
Well, I know the speaker's staff is waving their arms. She's got many, many appointments. She's got to get down to Annapolis, work on important stuff.
We're not going to bother you at all first quarter. No. Just come back with Kerwin, all right? Come back with everything we need.
We hope we can check back
in. Come back with a better state. Make our state better. How about that?
Absolutely.
It was our pleasure.
Great morning.
Thank you for having me.
Speaker Adrian Jones,
one of the
real outstanding leaders in the state of Maryland. Proud of you, Speaker.
Thank you very much.
Drinking some tea. We're having some chicken and waffles, and I'm going to have me an omelet here and maybe a little coffee to get me going. We're at State Fair. We're over at Cadenceville. It's Baltimore Positive. He's Don, the Speaker of the House. Doesn't get any better than that. We're back for more on WNST right after this.